Welcome back to In Bed with Lisa, the podcast. I'm so glad you're here. You are tuned in to the kind of sex ed that you wished you'd had at school. This is shame-free, evidence-based education designed to help you to have more fun in bed. Are you ready for that? Good, then stick around because today I'm going to share with you an interview that I had with Amy from Temple of the Feminine. Temple of the Feminine is her brand. You can find her on Instagram and her website that way. Now, Amy gave us an insight, like a beginner's little taster, to sacred sexuality. Have you ever been curious about this? Sacred sexuality is something that I've obviously been that I have sometimes been curious about, but sometimes felt like it is kind of something that is only for people who dress a certain way and use a certain language and, you know, meditate and dance and all of those things. I do try and meditate and dance, but I just don't consider myself to be, you know, one of those people who just seem to like have it all together and be in communion with the universe and all of that. So that's why I wanted to speak with Amy, because she made this so relatable and like reachable for everybody. So she like debunks the whole sacred sexuality thing, and although she says she works with soulful women, and she does, she helped this to be a conversation that could inspire any of us to start, and it can start with the breath. And also, why would you want to do this? Well, because the whole feminine energy vibe can help you to access different layers of your sexuality. It can be liberating. And that is what Amy shares with us today in such a no-nonsense way that I think you're going to love it. So keep listening if you are curious about finding out about sacred sexuality and how you can get started with this on your own, because that is a great way to learn more about yourself. So as you're listening, head over to Twitter and let me know what you're thinking. Let me know if you're enjoying this, if it's bringing up any questions or comments, suggestions. You can tweet me at InBedWithLisa. I love hearing from you, and this is how I can make this conversation even more valuable for you and conversations going forwards. So without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation. So now it's time to introduce the special guest to the show. Drum roll. Amy is a somatic sexual healing coach with expertise in tantric energy work and the sacred feminine arts. She is a trailblazer in breaking down societal norms around women and sex, and paving the way for individuals to forge their own empowering new narrative rooted in authenticity. She has an academic and professional background in international law, human rights, and criminal justice. Amy has a grounded and diverse understanding of the complexities of social issues that impact heavily on us, individually and collectively. Amy has worked and collaborated with a number of brands, including Remind Studio, Lululemon, Balance Magazine, and Beducated. Today, I'm delighted to be inviting onto the show Amy from Temple of the Feminine. She is based in the UK in a beautiful seaside town of Margate. She's somebody who I've admired for a long time on Instagram for her no holding back, honest and raw spiritual sexual wisdom. So I had to invite her on this show today. So Amy, welcome.
Oh, thank you. I'm just here like beaming at your intro. I appreciate it. Quite nice to someone else sort of reflect who you are.
And you're just such a ray of light on my Instagram feed. You're relatable and aspirational, and I think people really connect to that. So tell us more, a little bit more about Temple of the Feminine and what you do in the world.
Yeah, thanks. So Temple of the Feminine was birthed when I started having an awakening, if you like, a realization around the divine feminine, this aspect of feminine energy. And that was really sort of what I was working through and what I was doing in my personal development and then started sharing. And then what the most significant part of that was sexuality. And as I started to develop on that sexuality and also these elements of like the feminine, and I'm putting that in brackets because I feel like the term feminine has a lot of loadedness, and people will have their own and feels to what that word means. And I was picking up on that. And really what I was coming into was this raw sexual life force energy.
Oh, yeah.
Then I start. So, yeah, I was just sort of sex just became like on the personal development menu for me. And so I started sharing a bit about that. And as I went deeper onto my own journey, I was like, this is still such a taboo, such a judged, such a stigmatized part of our human experience and spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. And it's really still very niche. I noticed that because I had been on a spiritual journey, hence that kind of feminine energy work that I was doing, that I was learning from Tantra or neo-tantric spaces. Not just neo-tantric, I studied Hindu Tantra as well. And so I was realizing that still a lot of spiritual practices were skirting around the notion of sex. And it just became this point of fascination. I've always been fascinated in humans anyway. Mm. And as I was going deeper on my own journey around sex, and really, again, I'm going to use this term awakening, and I know that that might make people feel a certain way, but what I really mean figuratively, my eyes were becoming open to parts of myself and things that had happened and experiences that I had normalized and sort of internalized that were impacting my ability to be with this beautiful, raw sexual energy that I was connecting to in my spiritual practice and in your day-to-day and normal life and around you. The contrast was really stark. I was like, wow, it's really distorted in this world. And so I just committed my life to supporting women in connecting to their sexual energy and becoming empowered in their sexuality. And the more I do this work, the more it's become about me getting out of the way, because there are so many expectations and kind of like blueprints that teachers and guides everyone can have as like, this is the way it should be done now. This is the way it should be done. I think they're just all much of the same.
Yeah.
Some can feel more supportive and empowering, but I wanted to get out of the way and let people decide, support and empower people to decide what empowered sexuality is for them.
Love that. Because it really is a unique and individual journey for each person. So yes. I imagine that a lot of what you actually deal with is people feeling scared of stepping into their full nature, their full sensuality as a woman, as a feminine person, because that is the scary thing. I think that's why sex is missed out of so many of these spiritual practices. It's scary to think what that is going to mean. Like, are you going to become like this kind of slut? And that's a word that can make people feel a lot of different ways as well. So do you find that that is a lot of it, a giving permission, a getting out of the way and giving permission to people?
Yeah, giving permission. And I think that's a lot to do with how I show up on social media. It's not intentional. It's not in the sense that I don't sort of sit down and think this week, this is what I'm going to focus on. It's almost like it moves, and Lisa, you'll probably get this, like it kind of moves through my body. Like I feel impassioned in the moment to share this. Mm. And I feel like, but the way I show up on socials is like, you know, just really giving permission to talk about these things and normalize these things. And because I have done that myself. Mm. And so it's almost like I see the inhibitions that we carry and the kind of cages that we carry. And I'm speaking as, you know, a white woman in the Western world, right? It's never actually been safer for me to be sexually empowered. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to get arrested. I'm not going to get burnt at the stake. You know, I'm not going to be hanged. Mm. But there's so much happening on the internal that we need to unpack and unpick. And I feel like the more we do that, the more this will reverberate and ripple out. And the communities and societies and cultures around us and the narratives around that friends and family and colleagues and things will still hold. They're just going to have to catch up.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get on board. It's almost like this like invisible cultural societal glue that is keeping us all stuck when we're all just massively, desperately dying to be free, frivolous, full of joy, ecstasy, orgasms, sex.
Amy, I love how you paint it. Why is it that it feels like the people that are closest to us are the ones that we struggle to actually express ourselves fully with? It's the same if you're married. The longer you're married, almost the harder it is to really express yourself or to try to navigate something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we have such strong sense of self-identity that gets mirrored by those around us. I feel more sexually empowered on my own and then sharing on Instagram than if someone was in the room with me.
Or like in a retreat situation with like people you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's more space for new parts of yourself to show up. And I work with my clients and I work in my inner world as well about these sort of different parts. So we're not just one thing. And we know that because we can observe certain parts of ourselves doing something. And that's self-awareness. And it's like, oh, we can be aware that when I'm with this person, I get triggered or something like that. But I don't when I'm here. We can see that there are parts of us that show up in the bedroom, right? We might perform when we're laying, cuddling and kissing. And so these are parts of ourselves that we develop essentially as coping mechanisms, protective measures, but just because they maybe even worked at the time. And particularly when it comes to your example of like being in a long-term relationship, it is more challenging to become a new person within an existing relationship and to be a new person in a new relationship.
And
this is because we've already kind of developed what feels safe. The parts of us that want to be expressed but maybe don't feel safe are worried. Maybe they've never been expressed, so they're afraid of what that's going to bring into the world. Maybe they fear that they're going to lose this relationship if those parts are shown, and those parts may not be welcome and accepted. So all these parts are having their own fears and narratives and defense mechanisms, and getting to know them and being able to kind of speak to them. Do you want your like sacred slut to be present in your relationship? Can you kind of give that sacred slut a bit of an avatar or an archetype? And what would be a safe ritual or practice you could do with your partner just to let that part be seen a bit until it feels safe to be there?
Okay, that's a fun way of doing it. So you're kind of playing around with the archetype of that behavior, that facet of you. You're almost safely exploring it within an archetype kind of model so that you can just test it out a little and try it on for size. How do you do that in practice? Say you are in a long-term relationship. If we just go with this example, you're in a long-term relationship and there's something new you want to try, a fantasy or a new technique or a new sexual activity, for example. How would you actually take the steps to try and integrate that or invite that into the relationship?
Yeah, good question. So there's this couples therapy process called the Imago process. It's Harville and his partner. I was listening to yesterday and he was saying that we feel safer in structured conversations. Create spaces for you and your partner, first and foremost, to have conversations about sex outside of a sexual space, right? Because when we get into a sexual space, all our parts are going to kick in that naturally come. You know, we're going to feel like a bit embarrassed. We're going to feel vulnerable. So take it outside of a sexual space and find what works, what makes you both feel safe. It's better to have a structured space rather than accosting your partner and catching them off guard and being like, hey, you know when we did that thing last night? So you can both kind of resource yourself, come to it from a grounded place where you both feel supported. And if anything sticky or triggering comes up, you can hold yourself, you can hold your partner and have a proper closing to the conversation. But so bring that to the conversation first and foremost, and then carve out some time. You can create a little ritual space, sit in front of each other. If we take the sacred slut example, I don't know if slut is the best word for it, but let's go with it because it's something that is more well known in the spiritual sacred sex space. But the sacred slut is kind of wanton woman, the completely uninhibited woman who enjoys sex and being ravished and ravishing, loving and enjoying sex without inhibitions. So to be able to do that, you might have something you want to wear sacred slut. They have a particular way you want to set up the room as the sacred slut. So you carve out that time with your partner. You might want to cap the time because that can create safety.
Okay.
You know, rather than like, oh, where does this end?
And
you sit together and you set the intention, I want to show you my sacred slut. And then your partner will say, I want to welcome your sacred slut. And your partner can hold space while you bring that forward and if your partner an erotic dance, or it may be that you want to dominate, or you might have some needs and you might ask them to dominate. So really negotiate and play with that space without expectation that it has to be amazing sex or orgasmic or you have to go anywhere. Just play with the energy of it.
Right? It doesn't even have to be sex at all, I suppose, right? There doesn't even have to be any actual sex. It's just, this is me exploring this side. I love the idea that you're actually saying create a container. The two of you, this is a chance to play. It's like a play scene, isn't it? We're going to sit here, we're going to try this thing. We're just going to explore and test this out in a space with a capped time limit. We've got nothing else on the agenda. The cell phones are off. We're not talking about chores. This is the time for play and to see what comes through. I think that's a really fun way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you've said container, because I believe containers for sex and intimacy are absolutely necessary. And one of the reasons we're all having shit sex, because we are, until we're not, right? But like collectively, people are unsatisfied, is because they're over-reliance on spontaneous sex.
Oh, yeah.
And we're all like spontaneously pounced on when we're not really into it. And so responding or expecting something to spontaneously happen and it not happening, or wondering why we're not spontaneously turned on. And this reliance on spontaneity is killing sex lives.
Absolutely. And because if people think about when they first got with somebody, the way that sex just happened all of the time, it did happen all of the time. Well, maybe it did, but it wasn't necessarily spontaneous. You were thinking about it all the time. You were planning it all the time. You were making sure you were ready for it. So it was planned. It's just that you didn't realize how much you were planning for it. So
yeah, totally. And I can imagine, you know, for a lot of couples, even in that time, there were things maybe they weren't expressing that they might need or desire or not like so much. So creating a space that welcomes what works for you, what didn't work for you, what are your needs, what are your needs? That's so important.
Absolutely. That is the pathway to having really great sex.
Yes, totally. Totally.
Learning how to just be expressive. I just love that. So this is obviously something that you have used in your life. As you said, this is something that you've used. You've used sex and sexuality as a healing modality, and it's something that you also encourage your clients to do. So you say that you work with soulful women. So is it just a certain kind of person that would be able to access this stuff, or is everybody, is this available to all of us?
This is available to all of us. The reason I work with soulful women is because I've been on my spiritual path. Sex is an inherently spiritual practice. Good, great sex is a meditation.
Oh yeah.
Right? If you are of the ilk where meditation is a bunch of woo-woo rubbish, I might not be the best person to start with.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So that you definitely can have great sex, and there definitely is inroads, but I'm going to be teaching you how to be present, how to work with sensation, how to breathe, how to be in your body. And if these things feel like I'm just not, you know, you're not interested in them, then my tools or my practices won't land as well.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. So it is available to everybody, but there are different pathways into it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I'm speaking about your self-development practice. The sexual energy that we work with and we speak to and we connect into is our spiritual energy, right? I'll speak to that and I will say things like God and Goddess, and I do work with where my client is at always. I like to be real. I work with soulful women because that's the language I use and that's the path that I occupy.
Beautiful.
Work occupies, and that's the fundamental belief in my work. And not to put spirituality onto people, but just that this sexual energy is a life force energy. It's a healing energy, a creative energy. It's a force.
Absolutely. The tools that you're using are, like you said, spiritual practices. And so, for example, breathing is something that we could all use as a pathway to get us connected to our body. Would you say that's a good place to start? I'm considering somebody who maybe is listening to this, has never really gone down the route of spirituality, and is like maybe for the first time thinking about sex and spirituality.
Yeah, the breath is a great one. Of doing it myself, I would just sit cross-legged with your spine straight, because if we imagine sexual energy, and so this is a big part of the spiritual sexual energy piece that I teach, because we often think of sexual energy being in the genitals and then really going out, right? And I work on a different way. Sexual energy originates in the genitals and the pelvis, but we can actually move it up and into our body for like a more fuller experience. Mm-hmm. And the more sort of developed practices I do, run it right up to the top of the head, send it out into the our more sort of like spiritual centers, connecting into the ethers and the universe. But just to come back to that question, sitting and allowing cross-legged, allowing the spine to be straight, head wherever, closing your eye, placing a hand over your heart, maybe your vulva, and just tune into the energy in the vagina, in the vulva, in the pelvis, in the genitals. And then as you inhale, breathe in through the nose and almost imagine that you're breathing that energy from the pelvis up into the heart. And then you can even breathe it a bit higher if you prefer, but just the heart is fine. Breathing it into the heart, inhaling and exhaling out through the mouth and almost sending the energy back down and round. Mm. You should start to connect to this sense of sexual energy and you being an energetic being and how that energy can move and be felt on a visceral level.
Mm. Love it. That also gives a feeling of safety when you're like breathing into your heart. And that is so important in sex, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Safety is the number one thing that allows our body to relax and experience pleasure and orgasm. And we can think the initial thoughts that maybe come up when you think of safety is the opposite to danger. And so you might be thinking, well, of course I'm safe. I'm in a house, everything's fine. My partner's very loving, but safety runs a bit deeper in terms of emotional safety. And it kind of comes back to, for example, there's parts that don't feel safe to be seen. If you're feeling a little bit awkward, a little bit embarrassed, maybe a little bit of shame and discomfort, we can understand that as not feeling safe, right? It's the things that make us kind of contract, suppress our voice, not express our needs and our wants, our desires and our boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
All those parts can sort of not being safe. So when we feel totally safe, we are fully expressed. Our body feels soft and open. We're probably more in the body than in the head. We can express ourselves and we feel safe that we're going to be received in the way that we want to be received. Yeah. And there's this feeling of more expansion than contraction.
Amazing. And with so many people in that they are in their heads when they're having sex, they're stuck in their head, they're worrying about other things, and it just takes you out of the moment where there's no pleasure there because you're almost completely disconnected from your body. So that simple practice you shared can really help you to get in your body, surrender, feel safe, let your mind take a break so that you can actually access the pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest challenges, isn't it? Like people feeling that they're too in their heads to enjoy sex. The mind can be an amazing, powerful place when it's on board with what you want to do and where you're at and what you're trying to experience, right? Yeah. But it can also be like an absolute menace for taking you out of the moment.
Yes.
Out of your body and out of your pleasure, right?
Oh, yeah, Amy. So if somebody is feeling like they are stuck in their heads right now, listen to what Amy said. I'm going to sit quietly. We're not even talking about any kind of sexual activity right now. Sitting quietly, breathing, following the breath and that visualization that Amy shared, connecting to the heart, letting yourself surrender. And from there, who knows, you can open yourself up to other things, maybe move towards some kind of sexual touch if that feels good. That really is a powerful and simple practice.
Yeah, exactly. And the more we practice that, the more transferable it becomes in the moment with a partner.
Yeah, that is it. Practicing it alone is a really great start, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I would always say start alone, start with ourselves and explore and then bring that into partnership, we've found and what we've discovered into the partnership.
Beautiful. Amy, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today. I would love you to tell people how they can find out more about you, how they can work with you if they feel called to learn more, what is the best thing for them to do next?
Yes, thank you. So come and follow me on Instagram. I'm at Temple of Feminine. I share a lot of free content there. I've also got blog posts. You'll find my website from there, and I've got blog posts there and podcast episodes and resources on my website. Currently, the way to work with me is one-to-one. So I'm taking on one-to-one clients. And I'm also starting a practitioner training to support those who are already in the field of spirituality and self-development, personal development, who want to learn the skills and the tools and the knowledge to teach this work to their clients and community. I'm going to be running a practitioner training in March.
Fantastic. So the ripples of your work are just going to expand and expand.
Yeah, exactly. I have this vision, like I was saying, it's still so niche, it's still taboo. We need more sexually empowered women. And that doesn't mean we need more people going out having sex, unless that's what you want to do. We just need more people that have unstuck from that glue that I spoke about, that societal glue, and are charging off with this energy and this freedom and this liberation in their systems. Oh, and yeah, we need more people supporting one another in getting there.
I can just imagine all these women unsticking and charging forward. And as they do, they're giving permission to more people around them to just be themselves. And that's what it's about. Like you said, it's not necessarily about going out and having a load of sex. It is about like not having that envy, that sister wound. It's like healing our relationship with other women and ourselves as women, and just like going out there, allowing ourselves to have fun.
Yeah, exactly that, Lisa, exactly that.
Thank you so much for giving us your time today, Amy. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Ah, likewise. Thank you. Very energized from this conversation. So my pleasure as well.
If you would like to learn more about Amy and how you can work with her, head over to her Instagram account at Temple of the Feminine and connect with her there. On the link in her bio, you're going to find everything you need. So there's a link to her shop, because she sells those beautiful crystal wands, aka dildos. And you'll find her website and even a link to a free consultation call. And now, as promised, we're going to move into the Q&A session. And listen, I'm grateful for your questions and I'm going to do my very best to answer them. I know it takes a lot of courage to send these kinds of questions, even if you're doing it anonymously, that is all good. So question number one was a lot like our chat from last week's show. Remember, I spoke about desire discrepancy and I said, this is a question that I'm always asked. And yeah, here we go. My libido is far lower than my partner's, so how can I get myself interested in sex again? Now, desire discrepancy really does have an impact on relationships. We spoke about last week how it can form resentment and it can cause a disconnection. So I understand why this is a concern for you as a listener if you're feeling like your libido is lower than your partner's. Now, remember I said that you are not to blame. We're not putting any blame or judgment on somebody for having a lower libido. There are so many factors that can actually cause that, including that you may be asexual. But there are various factors, right? Including stress, anxiety, depression, hormonal changes, medication side effects, relationship issues, and other health concerns. These can all cause a decrease in libido. So here's a couple of suggestions. Talk to your partner. Communicate, because otherwise they might be making up a story in their mind of why you're not having sex with them, and they might start to feel insecure. So just tell them how you feel. Suggest possible reasons and solutions. Like you could say, listen, I am feeling really stressed at the moment. And communication can help them to understand where you're coming from and provide support. Another suggestion is to explore other forms of intimacy, because sex isn't the only option to stay connected. So try cuddling, holding hands, kissing, and other fun non-sexual activities. Also, address underlying issues. Is your decreased libido due to something like stress or anxiety or depression? There are things that you can do. You can speak to your doctor about your medication. You can include some physical activity in your day to help your body deal with the stress. You can set boundaries, talk to a therapist or a healthcare professional who can help you with these issues. You don't have to put up with it. And I just want to say, regular exercise, it really is an incredible way to reduce stress, improve your mood, and boost your libido. And take care of your overall health. A healthy lifestyle can really work wonders. So are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating nourishing food? Are you smoking and are you drinking? Is there something you can do to reduce that? And also, consider trying new things. Novelty really helps. Last week we spoke about accelerators of libido. This is what I mean. Trying new things in the bedroom can really spark your interest. How about new positions, new activities, toys? things that you and your partner are comfortable with, but like, how can you explore and journey together? And remember, everybody's libido is different. There is literally no normal. Another thing that people often ask me is, how much sex should we be having? You know, is once a week right? Once a day? Once a month? And there really is no normal. Quality over quantity always, and whatever helps you get your needs met. So it's essential to communicate with your partner and focus on what works for both of you. Sometimes that can be slightly outside of the box thinking, such as one partner with a higher libido self-pleasuring with the other person present, because then everybody is connected, everybody is involved, and the person who requires some kind of sexual release is also getting what they need. So there are a few ideas to get you started. And if you do continue to have concerns about your libido, then talk to a healthcare professional. They really can provide good support and guidance, especially somebody who has a special interest in sexual health. The second question here is from somebody who says they're a 35-year-old woman and they don't think they've ever had an orgasm. She asks, am I broken? Now, you might think this is interesting to hear that they don't know if they've ever had an orgasm, but actually this is quite common. Now, I just want to say you're not broken, but many women do have difficulty experiencing orgasm. It's far more common than you might think. So you might think you're the only one in the world that is not having orgasms, and that can lead to you thinking that you're broken. The truth is, many, many women are experiencing this. A lot of them are faking in the bedroom. A lot of them can only experience orgasm when they're on their own and not with a partner. If that's you, then you're also very normal. This was me too for a very long time. So many factors can contribute to reaching orgasm or not. And again, they include stress, anxiety, medication, hormonal imbalances, and relationship issues. Because sex isn't separate. Our sex life isn't separate from our life. What is going on in our life will impact what goes on in bed. So I just want to say that orgasm isn't the only measure of sexual pleasure or satisfaction. You can get a lot from an intimate encounter, and by following waves of pleasure and enjoying the connection, then you may find that orgasm is like the cherry on top of a really, really awesome cake. But still, communication with your partner about your sexual needs and desires can help you to explore what feels good and what doesn't. I also encourage exploring your own body through self-pleasure. That can help you to learn what feels pleasurable to you and may help you to experience orgasm. And notice I always say experience and not achieve orgasm, because achieving sounds like it's something that you are setting out to do, something like that you are winning or not. And that's not how it is. It's an experience. It is the last few seconds of like a 20 to 40 minute to 10 hour escapade, right? And if you are able to experience orgasm through your self-pleasure techniques, then that gives you some information to share with your partner. And if you're able to experience orgasm by using toys and vibrators, there is no shame in that. Why not bring those toys and vibrators into your partnered experience? This is 2023, you're allowed to do that. And now if you do continue to experience difficulty with orgasm, then therapists, healthcare providers, and coaches can give you some more guidance and support on that. Okay, the third question I have here is, I'm so tired. How am I ever going to find the energy for sex? I can relate to this, because when we are so tired, our bodies just need to rest. And we gain value in our society by being busy, 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 busy all the time, right? So you're busy, you're working yourself to the bone, and you are exhausted. By the end of the day, you just want to drop into your bed. So listen, it is normal to feel tired, and it is challenging to find the energy for sex when you're fatigued and when there are still 5,000 things on your plate. So firstly, can you set boundaries and realistic expectations of yourself? You don't have to use up every single little bit of energy and time that you have on being productive. It's okay. You're allowed to save some of that for yourself. You're allowed to save some of your time in the day for yourself. You're allowed to save some of your energy for yourself. It's not only a good day if you drop onto the sofa and then fall asleep in front of Netflix by 9 p.m. You're allowed to stop before you are frazzled. In addition to that, get enough sleep. I know, getting rest and sleep is essential for maintaining energy levels. Sometimes a power nap can help. Exercise, I've already said it, but it does boost energy and it does improve overall health. I could really do with listening to this advice myself. Even going for a quick walk or a light jog can be enough to boost your energy, boost your blood flow, and blood flows good. Remember last week we spoke about how the clitoris needs to get engorged with blood in order to feel the most pleasure? Well, going for a quick little walk or a jog or a boogie around your garden is great to get that blood pumping. Eat well. I know I sound like a stuck record, but eat to take care of your health. Make sure you're hydrated, manage stress, communicate with your partner. Oh, and foreplay. Consider foreplay because this is an excellent way to build energy and excitement, right? Especially for most women and people with vulvas have this responsive sexual desire. This is spoken about by Emily Nagowski in her book, Come As You Are. A lot of us need some sexual stimuli in order to actually feel turned on. So foreplay can help you get turned on. It can help build the blood flow. It can help you to increase pleasure, build your arousal, and make orgasm that much more within our grasp. Also, try incorporating different types of touch and massage and other forms of intimacy. And listen, if you really are flipping knackered and not in the mood and tired and not turned on, then don't push yourself. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. In fact, that can have negative repercussions in the long term, because if you force yourself to do it, you're overriding your own self-consent and you're making it feel like a chore, right? We don't want to make sex feel like a chore. So don't push yourself. Make sure you're taking time for yourself. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. And all of these things will have an impact. Thank you so much for sending those questions through. I know it takes courage. And if you have a burning question that you would like me to answer on the show, then reach out via Twitter at InBedWithLisa. Or if you'd prefer to stay anonymous, email me at hello@inbedwithlisa.com. I would genuinely love to hear from you. Well, I can't believe that is all for today's show. It rushed by so fast, but don't worry, I'll be back again at the same time next week. And I have a special guest lined up. Her name is Tia Lynn, aka the Sexy Biz Babe. She's going to be here to chat about, that's my drum roll, etiquette at sex parties. So, have you ever been curious about attending one of those? Or do you wonder what goes on at those parties, but you would like to be a fly on the wall? Then tune in, because Tia is going to share all of the saucy details. What was your biggest takeaway from this episode? Come and let me know over at Twitter at InBedWithLisa. I'd love to hear from you. And if you'd rather be anonymous, I get it. You know, you might not want everybody to see what you're talking about online. Then send me an email, hello@inbedwithlisa.com. It is really me there, and I'm really ready to reply to you. I love hearing from you. So thank you so much for sticking around for this week's podcast, and I will see you next time.